Happy hour! Welcome to it, the Glass in the Afternoon radio program, the voice of Bloomington, 98.7 AM 1370, or WGCLradio.com, wherever you're listening this week, this weekend, this day, wherever we are. Well, live radio is a fun thing, isn't it, kids? Well, hard-headed man, I don't know about brutally handsome, but here we are in the Crazy Horse Tavern. Happy hour. Oh, Osterman's good-looking. He's here today. Good afternoon, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
You ready for the holidays? Got all the boys' presents ready to go? Wife's presents ready to go? All the fun stuff that goes along with that?
For the most part, yes.
Oh, you're ahead of the game. Very, very nice. We'll remind all of you in listening land that you get free parking, street or garage, in the city of Bloomington this Saturday, next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday as well. So support your local business. Have fun. Now, we're here on the Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour. Well, the Crazy Horse Tavern is one of our local businesses. Get a gift card. You know, you run out of ideas, get a gift card. You run out of ideas, how about a barrel pick whiskey? Well, that's not bad, is it? For the booze hound in your life. We could have some fun with that. But Crazy Horse Tavern on Kirkwood brings us happy hour every Monday through Friday. It's always great when Osterman is live in the studio. We can have a little bit more fun. Why? We can see each other and get do verbal cues and visual cues and all that other fun stuff. You've been a very busy man this week and last week. We have basketball in the state of Georgia to recap. We have George McGinnis passing earlier today. We have a new quarterback potentially for Indiana football. We've got a new staff and a memorandum of understanding. Oh, and by the way, Kansas shows up on Saturday, ranked number 2 in the country, with Indiana's basketball future hanging in the balance. Well, probably not that close, no. It's one game. Does it define a season? Probably not. I'll let you talk me and the other listeners off the ledge here in just a couple of minutes. But let's get caught up on the news of the day, shall we? George McGinnis, age 73, passing away. One of the most, I don't even know if I have an adjective good enough. Undefeated at Washington his senior year. He shows up at Indiana, goes 30-15 in his one season, heads to the ABA, wins a couple titles, gets in the NBA, and everything I've read about him, and I did not have the good fortune of meeting the man, I know people who have, said he was a better person than he was a basketball player. How is all that possible?
Yeah, I mean, he was arguably, you know, there is an argument, and it's obviously one that's not winnable, but he's arguably the greatest high school basketball recruit of all time. He scored more than 1,000 points in a high school basketball season when there was no three-point line. and when, I'm guessing, I don't know this, but I'm guessing he played fewer than 30 games in the season. So you're not talking, I mean, high school basketball is never that in-depth anyway, but you're not talking about somebody who played like 42 games and scored 1,000 points. I mean, I'm assuming have averaged over 40 points a game or right around 40 points a game to do that. Obviously, his one season at Indiana, he was the first sophomore, which effectively then would have been freshman because freshmen weren't eligible to lead the Big Ten in scoring. He averaged almost 30 points per game.
Indianapolis, Washington was 31-0.
Okay, so 31 over 1,000 right points on. In 31 games.
Do the math, kids.
I think what was the joke that Steve Downing and George McGinnis's McNutt team was the best team on campus?
Yes, because they were the freshmen. Right. How good was Gary Tolleson? They only lost 79-76 in the championship game.
And then, you know, obviously he winds up with the Pacers, and you know, there's a little bit of the ABA stuff back there. I think that's more about, and he was a big advocate, a big fighter for this, getting ABA
benefits, right?
Well, almost kind of recognition of the ABA as a peer sort of professional league. You know, former ABA players getting those benefits, getting the recognition that this was professional basketball. Also, just it was a tough time to be a star basketball player. There wasn't a lot of national coverage of professional basketball. I think a lot of games back then were broadcast tape. A lot of it was very regional. But you
all
know, you talk to people who played with him. Obviously, won what, 2 ABA titles with the Pacers. I only talked to him a couple times for a couple different stories. He was always very thoughtful, very friendly, very warm, and as you said, you know, just about anybody you talked to about him painted a pretty similar, you know, pretty consistent picture.
Well, yeah, when you're not known just for your basketball, I think that's a true definition of what a person is.
And the other thing, too, is like, you know, sometime if anybody's just got some time to kill, there are a couple books out there about Washington in the 60s just as a high school.
Did Billy Keller play on that team?
I don't know if he played with Billy Keller. I don't know. I believe Keller might have been gone by then.
Okay.
Because Keller was more of a...
He went to Butler, right?
Purdue, I believe.
Oh, Purdue, okay.
I think he did. But I think Keller was more of a contemporary, if I'm not mistaken, of Larry Highball, who played at Indiana, was one of the IU 10.
And then
he's in the CFL Hall of Fame. And that was actually one of the stories I
talked
to. You
did one of those one summer,
George,
right?
Yeah, to George McGinnis about. But if you just go back, I mean, like Washington was the brand name in high school athletics in virtually everything in the early, mid-late 60s. A guy named Eddie Bopp, who I believe played quarterback possibly at Washington around that time, wrote a great book about the high school. And just bear in mind, you know, this is at a time when the city of Indianapolis did not have really professional sports. They had the 500, but that was, of course, just one day a year. The Pacers hadn't arrived yet. The Colts hadn't arrived yet. You had IU and Purdue. Again, college basketball was probably just beginning to sort of emerge as a national brand around this time. You know, I remember hearing a story. I think it might have been from Billy Keller. I'm not sure. One of Larry Highball's teammates at Washington about how Highball had sort of a track rivalry with a guy from, I think, Brebeuf named Clyde Peach. And like 10,000 people would show up to their meets, you know, to watch them race against each other. And so that's the scope we're talking about here. You know, how big of a deal high school sports was to Indianapolis in the 60s and Washington with all these guys we've talked about, not least George McGinnis, who may have been the most accomplished of all of them. You know, they were the faces of all that.
And sadly, at 73 years of age, passing from complications after cardiac arrest. But George McGinnis, one of four jerseys, that's it, hanging in the rafters at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, along with Reggie Miller, Mel Daniels, and Roger Brown. And, of course, Coach Slick Leonard has got to be up there as well. So, yeah, if you say it's a tough day for Indiana basketball, high school, yes, check. Indiana University, the one-year unbelievable year, check. And, obviously, the pro game as well. So, one of the defining players, as you mentioned, of an era. The Pacers falling to the Bucks last night, 140-126 here on WGCL. We'll have Pacers for you next week as they are in Charlotte on Wednesday. We've got too many other things to get to with local stuff before the Pacers. Pacers schedules are always interesting as well because they play a lot of Friday night games in the NBA, and we always have high school hoops. How about J.R. Holmes going for 900 wins on Friday night? It's funny, and the funnier part is Terre Haute North has a three-game winning streak against South. That doesn't even make any sense. We'll be there for history. We'll see the 98-99 team, the 25-year silver anniversary of one of the best teams, well, not to win the state championship, but they were awfully good. Jason Gardner beat them at Hinkle Fieldhouse. The team will be introduced at halftime, hopefully after 32 minutes of hoopage. Dave Novak and the Hall of Famer Joe Smith will present the 900th victory. 900, gee whiz. That's Friday night here on WGCL. We have hoops for you coming up next week again, Charlotte and the Pacers, and we'll have one more high school game to wrap up 2023 a week from Friday as South and Evansville Harrison. I believe Evansville Harrison is ranked and unbeaten at the time. Will come to town as well. So a little conference Indiana basketball for you tomorrow. Girls go tonight, North and South on the north side. So there you go. We're covered there. Let's get to Indiana football, shall we? We'll get the do's and don'ts out of the way. Why we'll do the last part of the show, IU in Kansas. And we'll look back to Auburn for a minute. But Kurt Cignetti's here. A memorandum of understanding has been produced. The open door laws and whatever else. You've got the information for us. It all came out right when we were on the air yesterday afternoon. We knew who his staff was for the most part. We don't know what they're going to be paid unless that has also been found out. But now you have the contract situation. Why do people worry about how much we're paying a guy? Well, why do you think?
I think
that
you worry more about
it
when it's time to renew him. I mean, I think that's more when you. I think. Listen, first of all,
Indiana fans have a thing about money because they were worried about can we pay Archie's buyout?
Well,
can you
all
pay
fans,
all, these
all fans do to a certain extent because I think that's the cleanest way fans can understand like investment into a program is. How much you're paying a coach or a coordinator, or are you renovating a facility? you know, nobody wants to hear like, well, we've made incremental growth. You know, we're spending $10 million more a year now than we were 10 years ago, but we're spending it on 35 different things.
Yeah.
So all of them itemized don't look like a big deal. But
what I would say about football till the end of August,
what I would say about something, what I would say about a contract like this one is, I think he's the second lowest paid coach in the Big Ten. He's still making an average of $4.5 million a year. So
the guy from Northwestern is below him. That's the only one.
Do you have his contract? I've never seen a Northwestern contract.
The guesses I've seen.
Okay. Well, because Ryan Walters is below him at Purdue, so then he would be the third lowest
because paid head coach. The Northwestern guy who took over for Fitzgerald has no Division I experience as a head coach,
and that's possible. But I mean, we can't.
It's private school.
If we don't know that for sure yet,
you're a reporter. I'm a talk show host.
But the two things I would say are number one, three things I would say. Number one, it was enough to get away from James Madison, so I really wouldn't worry too much about it right now. Number two, it is incredibly incentive laden. So for example,
first of all, he's making $677,000 at James Madison.
Then that was last year's number. They'd supposedly put a contract in front of him that, in his own words, he could have retired on, stayed there for the rest of his career. So I'm guessing that was in the seven figures somewhere, but probably not anywhere near $4.5 million.
$27 million
scheduled to be paid over 6 years. It's one of those things where he starts on the low number and he works his way up to the high number, in part because everybody always assumes you'll never get to year six. Either you'll have to fire him, or he'll deserve a raise, or he'll move on. But like using the incentives as an example, he gets $100,000 if he wins 5 Big Ten games. He gets $150,000 if he wins 6 Big Ten games. If he wins a Big Ten championship game, he gets $1 million, or maybe it's $2 million. I'd have to double check my story. Just for making a bowl game, he gets
$200,000
an extra year on his contract. He gets another $500,000 in staffing money.
Huge.
And he gets a $250,000 raise. So right now, for context, right now he gets paid $500,000 in base salary. Universities have to do that so that there's not one state employee who on the salary projection is making, you know, $8 million. He gets a $250,000 retention bonus. I think it's November 30th of every year, provided he's still in the job. So you count that as it's guaranteed as long as he's there. So you count it as scheduled salary. And then Indiana, different schools can use different terms. Indiana has always used a term called outside marketing and promotional income. And that encompasses a whole range of things: appearances on the coach's show, appearances at booster events, all those things. It's really just a way to goose those numbers up really high. It's always the big dollar figure. I think it's 3.5 next year. So he's scheduled to make a total of 4.25 next year. But let's live in a hypothetical future where he makes a bowl game next season. He gets the extra $500,000 in staffing money. He gets another year put onto the end of his contract, and he gets a permanent $250,000 raise on his OMPI, his outside marketing and promotional income, which right now it starts at 3.5, and over the 6-year deal, it increases by $100,000 each year. So he would keep getting that $100,000 increase annually, but he would put another $250,000 onto that number every year. So instead of $3.5 million this year, it would be $3.75 million. Instead of $3.6 million this year or next year, it would be $3.85 million, and you just keep going up. And just for making the bowl, he also gets a one-time bonus of $200,000. And if he wins it, he gets another $50,000. So basically, if he were to win a bowl game, the lowest possible bowl game, the Myrtle Beach Bowl, the Bahamas Bowl hosted in Charlotte, he would get a $250,000 one-time bonus, a permanent $250,000 raise, $500,000 more for staffing, and another year on the end of his deal. It is an incredibly incentive-laden contract, and if he were to start hitting those bonuses with any regularity, I have no doubt Indiana would tear it up.
Gladly pay him.
And I don't think Indiana – I sort of theorized this yesterday. I don't think Indiana would ever say this out loud. Indiana's got 2 years of $7.75 million payments owed to Tom Allen.
Two or one? Didn't they just pay one?
Well, you know what I mean.
Okay.
One for this budget year and one for next budget year.
Gotcha.
If Cignetti is a success, you can be reworking his contract within about 2 years, knowing that there's a big hole. Like, already you're paying him slightly less than you were going to pay Tom Allen annually. You've shortened Tom Allen's buyout, not just in terms, but in years. So I guess what I'm arguing here is basically if you do – in some, you know, athletics departments have to operate at least in part on 5-year projections. If you do a 5-year projection in what you're paying your head football coach, you're actually not spending that much more ultimately right now than you would have if Tom, if Cignetti had gotten Tom Allen's contract and there was no buyout to pay. You're not paying a huge amount more spread out over 5 years. So you get to the end of year two, Cignetti's made back-to-back bowl games. Again, this is a hypothetical. Not only is he, in that hypothetical, giving himself an extra $1 million in raises and bonuses and then also staffing money, but he's also in a position where you're probably just going to go ahead and rip up his contract and redo it anyway. And you can do that having cleared the two $15 million buyout payments.
Well, and that's good because also they had a $1.25 million buyout to get him out of his James Madison contract.
Yeah, and listen, this is not like mystery math. Everybody does this stuff. It's, you know, you can pay Tom Allen all that money at once, but you can amortize it within how you build it to your budget. You know, how you
like you're buying Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, well, that's a different story.
I like to throw you curveballs.
But the point is, well, Shohei can't throw any right now.
Right. Not right-handed.
It's not, you know, that there's a lot of sort of brow furrowing about contracts, as you said, and how much you're paying relative to this and how much you're paying relative to that. Well, again, if he goes to back-to-back bowl games, you just tear it up and redo it, and you give him an extra $1 million a year with a lot of those same bonuses. It reminds me, and I'd have to sit down and put them side by side, but it reminds me of basically where Kentucky's gotten to with Mark Stoops in terms of
– and now he's going to Texas A&M and not making
it. Well, not now. Not that he's been connected to, what, like Florida State and A&M.
Oh, sure.
But when Kentucky got to that point where Stoops kind of had the program rolling, and it was like, hey, more years than not, we're going to make bowl games – then that was the kind of stuff Kentucky set up. Was it was like, we're going to pay you a pretty competitive sort of guaranteed salary, but then we're going to build in all these bonuses around job security, bowl victories, and the staffing pool is important too.
Continuity.
Because that allows you, you know, you go to, if you're Indiana, you go to three straight bowl games. Even if you keep your head coach, people are going to want some of your other coaches. They're going to say, okay, well, what's that defensive coordinator about? What's that offensive line coach about? Well, you're not going to keep everybody forever, but that allows you to bump up a contract here and there to maybe ward off some interest. Or if Oklahoma says, we want Bryant Haynes, we'll pay whatever it takes to get him, and Indiana says we can't pay him, you know, $1.8 million, well, then at least the next guy is going to, you know, you're going to have a fat wad of cash there to the next guy. It all kind of promotes this healthy idea that the more you win, the more success comes, the more you'll be able to kind of keep fostering.
I'm throwing out a hypothetical here, since we won't play football till the end of August, right? So we can probably talk about these all summer long. So I'll make this quickly. Why are we? I had somebody ask me this question, and it kind of I brushed it off initially. Then when I thought about it more, it was interesting. Why is Indiana bidding against themselves in some of these situations? You have a bonus structure. You just eloquently laid it all out about how much money could be made going forward. This is a guy who in 4 or 5 years is going to be in his late 60s. It's just a formality to have this contract, knowing and you're hoping in 3 or 4 years you tear it up and start a new one. That bonus structure is not good enough. That's where it gets lost on some people who don't follow this as closely as you. Who else would be coming in to take him away if he's got this good structure put together? Or does everybody go in saying, hey, we know this is the framework
that we use?
Well,
it's a combination of market rate.
Sure, which is bottom of the Big Ten, as you
but
pointed out.
Some very obvious and, if he's successful, very attainable bonuses.
If he's successful, those bonuses keep going, though. They don't stop at one time.
No, and that's kind of the point, is it's like, well, go to bowl games your first 3 years at Indiana, and you're not going to be the lowest paid coach anymore, because that is an extra $1.5 million over 3 years.
Sure.
So it's a little bit market rate. It's a little bit saying, like, hey, you know, you fall into kind of this range, the same way you would think about free agents, or back before there was a more rigid slotting system like in the NFL, we would always wait for draft picks to sign. Draft picks would always want to wait
until the
picks around them kind of created a market for them. So it's a little bit of that, and it's a little bit of, you've been very successful, we're going to have to make it worth your while to come here. On the other hand, you haven't been in the Power Five for a really long time, so, you know, that's a down, that's an up, that's a pro, that's a con. There will always be a little bit of competition. Like, I think it was pretty strongly suggested Duke was trying to get in the door late because, of course, their job opened up later than Indiana's did. But in the same breath, you know, it's always kind of a balance of everybody's sort of at the negotiating table, which means there's always going to be a little bit of poker played.
I think the greater point is fans shouldn't worry about this because there's so many moving parts to it. Tom Allen was at a different part in his career. He was the up and comer. He was 8-4. He was 6-6. We better secure him before he goes to one of these big schools. And I don't know if that's the same here or not. But that's why fans should just worry about football, right? Well, you shouldn't have to worry about let the agents in the university negotiate.
Well, yeah, to some point. I mean, obviously, there will always kind of be accusations that ADs are being had by agents and the lawyers are undefeated.
Tale as old as time.
But again, the other thing I would say is, in terms of publicized deals, it's the second lowest one in the Big Ten, so it's not like you're going crazy. The buyout number is not crazy. He gets about, you know, 3-4 years of comfortable protection, like any coach would. And, you know, if he's not successful – You know what, we all know what happens to coaches that aren't successful. If he is successful, if you feel like you want to keep him around, you've got a lot of room for growth in terms of the ceiling of the contract. You're not starting him at $7 million, knowing you probably can never go that much higher,
right?
Or if he's successful, he'll leave Indiana, and suddenly Indiana will say, "We got the money. We've got the culture.
We can go do something else.
We can." Well, I mean, IU baseball is a very relevant local example. You know, if Tracy Smith had stayed at Indiana in 2013, he probably would have kept having success. He probably would have kept winning games. He probably would have kept competing in the Big Ten. He might have even put together another team that could make an Omaha run at some point. And it would have been great for Indiana under Tracy Smith. But when Tracy Smith left for Arizona State, that told other promising assistants or, you know, talented young head coaches, Indiana's the sort of place you can go and compete and win and get resources and get fan support. And if the bigger opportunity comes, they won't stand in your way. And who came? A guy that eventually went on to Mississippi State, which is one of the most prominent, not that Arizona State's not, obviously it is too, but one of the most prominent jobs in the country, and he won a national title. And the point is that, you know, and then at a certain point you get a Jeff Mercer, who's obviously got ties to the area, but
young man,
you know, if LSU called Jeff Mercer, he'd have to listen. I mean, you know, you'd be foolish not to. But the point is, you keep building that reputation up and up and up, and then suddenly, I mean, I liken it a little bit, especially in the portal era. You and I both follow soccer. Think about the teams that basically make their brand on developing players and selling them on for big fees.
Every team in Belgium.
All the teams. I mean, all the big teams in Portugal.
Sure.
PSV, Ajax, the whole Dutch. Sort of Red Bull set up in Central Europe.
Yep.
Your Brightons, to some extent, your Brentfords, right. Teams that are comfortable buying low and selling high. And I think that, frankly, there's an argument. I've been toying with trying to write something about this around Indiana. There's an argument for trying to do that in the transfer portal. Be the sort of team that says, you come here, we'll get you better. If a bigger NIL opportunity eventually comes along, we're not going to stand in your way. But what we're going to do is we're going to become the team that develops those kinds of players. And then what happens is you become, for example, a Brighton or a Spurs, where at some point you say, we don't have to sell these players anymore. Yeah. We've made enough money. We've had enough success. They can achieve their aims here. Fewer of them are going to want to leave. And every once in a while, one will. That's just the nature of things.
Sure.
But you build it up over a period of time. You allow yourself to just consistently reinvest and build that. I mean, like, you know, 5 years ago, even under the Red Bull structure, Leipzig would have sold
anybody,
good player that somebody put real money down for. All the Portuguese teams, you know, it's their business model.
Yeah.
But they're still in the last eight of the Champions League every year. You know, they're still in the group stages every year. They're still making all that money. And what can happen is, I think about a player like Enzo Fernandez, who was, you know, went to Chelsea for 100-something million pounds.
Yeah, 110.
Supposedly Chelsea and Liverpool were both interested in buying him straight out of Argentina. But Enzo Fernandez might have said to himself, I'd rather go to Benfica. At Benfica, they'll pay the same amount of money for me, but they'll play me, because I'm an investment for them. If I struggle a little bit early on, I'm not going to get lost in this morass of world-class players,
right,
and eventually loaned out and sold. If I go somewhere where I am essentially we're paying 15 now and we're going to get 85 later, they'll keep playing me. If I go somewhere if I go anywhere somewhere that has three of me already, then they're not nearly as invested in continuing to push me on.
Then your development stops and everything stops.
But if I become the player that goes to Chelsea for 100 million pounds, at that point they are invested in me.
Yep.
Now they are tied to me. Now they are going to keep playing me if it's a little bit up and down. And I think that, you know, it's not apples to apples, but I think that teams like Indiana, programs like Indiana, can build that sort of reputation, at least in part, in the portal, and also potentially with coaches, both with assistants and – you know, long term, if we're looking at, like, again, the 10-year, 15-year projection, you can get to a place where you have that reputation with head coaches.
We know the assistants are being taken care of at Indiana University because Coach Cignetti wouldn't have come here if they weren't. I can probably make that leap. I don't have the facts or the memorandum of understanding in front of me to do that, but I doubt he would come here and bring seven of his guys if he thought that it was chintzy or not good. So fans always worry about interesting things. Hey, there's a quarterback from Ohio. He's heading this direction. Carter Smith appears to be coming back. Give me 2 minutes on football before we got to get to the hoops.
Yeah, Curtis Rourke, MAC Player of the Year in 2022, tore his ACL near the end of that season, came back and played a significant portion of this season, a little bit less effective, but still got Ohio to another 9-win season, another bowl berth. He's got 1 year left. This will be his sixth year he's using, I think, his COVID year, I assume. I mean, just a really promising player. I don't think it's fair to call him a stopgap. Cignetti has a fair amount of success with transfer quarterbacks, not least Jordan McLeod, who is his quarterback last year at James McLeod, won Sunbelt Player of the Year. But I also think it makes sense. And listen, if somebody else, you know, comes on leaps and bounds and beats him in the spring or the fall, fair enough. But you look at a situation where that quarterback room right now is redshirt sophomore Taven Jackson, redshirt freshman Brock Lowry, true freshman Alberto Mendoza, the kid who flipped from James Madison this week. And then potentially maybe somebody like Tyler Cherry, the four-star quarterback from Center Grove. Well, that's freshman, redshirt sophomore. We saw what happened last year when Indiana left itself with a too young quarterback room. And eventually Brendan Sorsby emerged, and he played well down the stretch. But that, you know, a lot of things go wrong in the 3-9 season. One of them for Indiana last year was they could not establish and settle on a quarterback because the guys they had were just too young. This allows you the opportunity, if Rourke does win the job, to put it in the hands of an experienced player, a winner, a guy that led Ohio to back-to-back 9-win seasons. He's only got 1 year, so you can look at all your other younger QBs and say, this is not going to hinder your development. And, hey, if you come out and beat him in the spring, summer, fall, then fair enough.
Guys get hurt playing quarterback in the Big Ten and the NFL, that's
the other part of it, too, is you want depth. But it gives Cignetti something that makes a lot of sense on paper, which is a veteran quarterback that he may very well be able to kind of put in, you know, the offense in the hands of for 1 year while he looks at what else he's got and develops some of the younger guys behind the scenes. I think that – who's the other player you asked about?
Carter Smith.
I mean, he just made the announcement he's coming back. It's not – I don't think Indiana, at least based on my perception, it doesn't seem like Indiana has been targeting a ton of the kids that have gone into the portal. And that will always be a little bit the case. Some guys, even not in a coaching change, some guys will be like, hey, if you want to go in the portal and see if there's other opportunities, like, you can stay here, but I'm going to tell you, like, there's not a ton of NIL for you here. There's probably other guys who are going to get more snaps than you here, that kind of thing. But I think that, you know, of the guys that went in, I think some of those offensive linemen, including Smith and Carpenter, and then certainly I'm confident in saying Donovan McCulley, are guys that the staff would like to keep if possible. But I don't think that the, you know, if you look at the list, I think it peaked at about 27 or 28 players that went into the portal around the coaching change. I don't even necessarily think a dozen, you know, are on the sort of like, hey, right, let's it might be one where, like, a, you know, somebody comes and says, I'd like to come back, and they say, okay, great, we'll take you back. And Indiana doesn't need bodies right now. They're in the low 60s in projected scholarships for next year. That's not practical. It is important to note, as my beat counterpart at the Herald Times, Mike Nieselik, often does, the counter rule is gone. You can sign as many players as
that's
you want.
That's the good news, yeah.
Which means that if you have a roster exodus, you don't have to rebuild it over a period of, like, 3 years. You can do it all in the winter window and the spring window if you want. But Smith's a big win because I do think he was on that short list of players that they really wanted back. He's only a redshirt sophomore next year. He's got incredible athletic upside, and he's got a year starting at left tackle in the Big Ten under
huge.
His belt.
That's, absolutely huge.
That's substantial.
Good stuff. Zach Osterman, Indy Star beat writer, ZachOsterman.com, or at Zach Osterman, IndyStar.com, at Indy Star Sports. You can find all of his work. Support local journalism. We'll talk hoops when we come back. The Crazy Horse Tavern on Kirkwood, happy hour, rolls on a Thursday, 5:38 at WGCL. All right, welcome back. Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour. One final time with Zach Osterman live in the studio here on the 14th day of December, 541 at WGCL. Your Money with David Hayes follows in 20 minutes. Thursday night football, Chargers Raiders 7:30. High school hoops tomorrow night. J.R. Holmes looking for win number 900. Tonight, you can go to the north side and see North and South girls basketball. Tomorrow night, we'll be on the south side at the J.R. Holmes court. Well, hoping the South Panthers pick up win number 900 for coach and break their three-game losing streak against the Patriots of Terre Haute North. Colts, no Jonathan Taylor, no Braden Smith. 3:30 pregame Saturday. The Steelers are in town. The Steelers will have T.J. Watt playing, so that's not good for the Colts. But the Steelers have lost their last two games at home against the two of the three worst teams in football. You let me know when you get the NFL figured out. You won't. Indiana, Kansas, 12:30 CBS on Saturday. The number two-ranked Jayhawks come to town. Indiana had a difficult, well, it was 22-10, 12:54 to go in the first half, and then the Hoosiers decided to give up 42 points in 13 minutes and only scored, well, I'm not going to add up how many they scored. It wasn't good, kids, 13 more. Auburn, 52 in the first half, 52 in the second half. There was no way to control what was going on there. You saw how much Xavier Johnson means to this Indiana team by not playing against a really good backcourt. What was the backcourt scoring? 63-23, something like that, when it was all said and done. You had a front row seat down there in Atlanta. What do we do with this game? Learn from it and throw it in the trash? What do you do if you're an Indiana fan?
So I have a theory.
Oh, good.
I would rarely just sort of like come out and basically unprompted just be like, oh, I think give them a break. I think, and I watched some of the game back, I think they were sick. Because Tuesday night, CJ Gunn is on the questionable list.
Yeah.
He plays, and he says, yeah, I've been really sick. And then Saturday, suddenly like
eight
half
guys.
The rotation is on the questionable list. And to be honest, well, listen, you give up 104 points. You gotta wear that. And
now, if your fever's 104, yeah, that's part of
but
it.
But like, I mean, you think about just the sluggishness of some of that game. It's a 2 o'clock game. There's no weird travel or anything like that. But it would be exactly the sort of year where guess what? Everybody's got a stomach flu, or everybody's getting, you know, half the team was getting fluids in the locker room before the game. Again, I'm not trying to make excuses. I don't know that. No one has whispered that in my ear and said, why don't you go say this on the radio and just get some people back on side. I operating under that theory, and some of this could also be confirmation bias, watching some of that game back was like, man, they just look slow. Like they were
stuck in cement.
There was no pop. There was no explosion.
To your theory,
they hit all those threes at the beginning. I saw Bob Rathman, the longtime Hawks play-by-play guy, great guy, and I was just telling him this team won't shoot any threes, they won't hit any threes, and then it's like boom, 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 one, two, three, four. I was like, well, I look really stupid, and then I think they made two the rest of the game. But
to your theory on that, which I don't dismiss completely, you didn't see Woodson lose it with his team.
Yeah.
That's another
clue. And he also didn't lose it.
Because you've seen him lose it before when the effort hasn't been there.
I think about that Iowa game last year where he's just – the one here, not the one with Fran up in Iowa City. They lost it for a different reason up there. But, I mean, he was furious after that Iowa game here in, like, late February, whatever that was. They just got bombed out of Assembly Hall, and you could tell.
And beat Iowa.
He was on fire. Post-game, he was very level, which, again, makes me think that maybe – you know, in his own mind, he's thinking, we got to get better in these games. We got to improve.
I got to get my team ready. It like wasn't the effort was bad.
Yeah, that it like maybe he knows that there was an element there that he just couldn't control. And I don't, I mean, where do we set the sliding scale? Whether it was by 28, like if none of them had fevers, then should they have only lost by 10? Like what?
I pointed out 52 points in each half.
Yeah.
You had 15 minutes to adjust it. Nothing adjusted.
The only thing – well, and honestly, the thing that, again, made me feel like maybe there was a little illness.
Well, that's why I'm agreeing.
Malik Renew comes out, second half, he's all fired up. He cuts that lead from 18 down to 11, and you sort of expect like some sort of response, and it's like nobody can get up and follow him. Like everyone's like – I mean, there's just like – you get one of your best players, one of your most important players, one of your most vocal players, certainly outside your captains. And he's like, we're going to get up. We're going to do this. We're going to make it respectable. And there's like nobody that can sort of summon the whatever to stand up and go with him. I just wondered if they were sick. No, and I don't like – listen, the flip side of that is 19 points against Arizona. 24 points at Kansas, or was it 22? 20 points against UConn, 28 points against Auburn. You know, Mike Woodson wanted these games.
You got them.
You can't stop. You can't keep losing them so in such a pronounced way where, you know, you can sort of make the argument that you were competitive with Kansas and UConn. The game just gets away from you at the end. But on the other hand, you really never looked that you were in control of that game. Obviously, the game at Kansas last year was ugly early. The game against Auburn gets away from them pretty fast. Once it starts to slip away, and again, maybe another question of, you know, the ability to give effort. Like, once it starts to slip away, no one can even like, there's no pulling it back. It's just like, boom, it's gone. But
you do that, then you go beat Purdue twice. You win at West Lafayette, and you finish in the top four of the league. And. So I don't think one game makes the season. I know the trend that you just brought up is very real. You did beat North Carolina. Well, they were sick, and they played at Oregon. And da-da. You beat them. That's what you do. You beat the guys that are in front of you. So there is no guarantee to any of this. You didn't lose at home, ranked 25th in the country to Chicago State. I know that didn't happen.
No.
So, again, somebody's always got it a little worse. Why the feel of the referendum on the Kansas game? If they don't win, it's really not that much different.
No, I think there's
I already know they're 2-0 in the Big Ten.
I wrote about this, though, in Talking Points.
I didn't read this today, so I'm glad you're here. I've been busy.
The flip side is, if you don't, you know, in the here and now, if you don't beat Kansas, you get nothing of any real value out of your non-conference season. Let's assume you lose to Kansas, win those last three games around
Christmas.
You're going
to win those three.
You know, well, we would have said they were going to beat Army and they were going to beat Wright State.
They did.
Yeah, but those games were closer than they should have.
They won the games. That's all that matters.
You'll come out of the non-conference with a good strength of schedule number. Because not only did you play your UConns and your Kansases and your Auburns, but also instead of playing, you know, seven sub-300 teams, you got some teams in the 140s there, some teams in the 160s there. You at least gave yourself some tough guarantee games as well. But what's your signature non-conference win going to be? Harvard and Indianapolis? That's nothing, really. And so, in the here and now, you don't beat Kansas, you get nothing out of the non-conference. In the long term, there's two problems. Number one, the Big Ten's not great. And there's going to be some opportunities, you know, like Nebraska away might be a quad one win this year, but Nebraska away might be tougher than it's been in years past. You know, you've got teams that really haven't held up their end. Michigan State, I mean, Maryland is like 150-something in the net right now. That game's worthless. Michigan's holding on barely as a quad one win right now, and I don't think you need to worry if you're an Indiana fan. In fact, I know you don't. You don't need to be sitting here fretting your resume and your nitty-gritty sheets on December whatever it is, 14th. But you do need to recognize that at some point you're going to have to prove you can beat these kinds of teams, and there aren't going to be nearly as many of those opportunities in Big Ten play as there normally are. And so suddenly, if you can't get a signature non-conference win, even Kansas, even at home, Kansas is obviously a signature no matter what. But even at home, if you can't pick up one of those wins, it's going to take a lot more effort to push the ceiling up in conference play.
And I think beating Kansas doesn't change that dramatically. You can't walk around at 9-11 in the Big Ten, 10-10 in the Big Ten, and say, well, we beat Kansas. It's not going to help you. You just told me the reason why. I think it just needs to get better. I think the building will have a big factor on Saturday. Where do you stand on that? There have been games over the years where, right, Kansas comes in. And here's – I've got another theory as well. I'll throw this one at you. This is a big game for Indiana. I don't know what Kansas thinks of this. They've played Connecticut. They've played – they've played a big rivalry game last week with Missouri. They've played, you just keep naming Michigan State, keep naming them all. Kansas has already gone through a gauntlet. They didn't look at Indiana like, oh, here's a big trip to Assembly Hall. I don't think they look at it that way. I think that helps Indiana because you might get in there and jump on them. And the other thing about this Kansas team, there's not Grady Dick and Jalen Wilson on there. They're going to get 40 points guaranteed coming out of the gate. McCullers can't shoot. We know what Dickinson does.
Yeah, they don't. I think they made like 6.5 threes, 6.6 threes a game,
Thank
something
you.
Like
Come
that.
Come on in. Come on in. And
now,
let's get the
you
got
to be wary of like Nick Timberlake going off, you know,
he's
something
shooting
like that.
29% from three.
But you match up well with what they've got.
Yes.
Defensively.
KJ Adams is a problem, but we are bouncier than we were last year. That'll help.
And they're not as long.
Right.
So that was what really dragged Indiana down in that game offensively, because Indiana had the size advantage in a lot of respects. Kansas wanted to play smaller wing type players as forwards, and then KJ Adams is only, he's a good player, but he's only 6'7".
Boing, so we kept
sort of saying like, oh, Indiana might have the size advantage and may be able to punish Kansas a little bit. You know, they're as big and tall, or bigger and taller in a lot of these spots. And then what they found out was, especially once Xavier Johnson went down, Kansas was just flooding the passing lanes with arms and legs. Well, I don't think that's necessarily going to be something that Kansas can do quite as well this weekend. They've still got length. They've still got athleticism.
They're still good.
It's not quite the same. They do have a really good veteran point guard. I think that's something where, you know, if you don't have Xavier Johnson, and we don't know yet, we talked to Mike Woodson tomorrow morning. Obviously, just based on the direction of all these things, signs point to it being, I think, less likely he plays than he does. But, you know, if you don't have him, DeJuan Harris does become a problem, even if he doesn't score a ton most of the time, because that means, you know, you're probably going to have Trey Galloway on some of their bigger guards, which means DeJuan Harris becomes chiefly Gabe Kupp's job. And I think Kupp's has done a commendable job, particularly defensively early in his career.
And he's not afraid of the fight.
But you're talking about one of the sort of savviest point guards in college basketball. That's tricky. That's difficult.
Well, that's why Kansas is ranked number 2 in the country. Right. Indiana is not. They have better players than we do. Can they win? Well, it's not a 7-game series. It's a 1-game series. So I think that's this is not an explosive Kansas team. They struggled with Eastern Illinois at home. Missouri, of course, that's a – you know what? That's a bigger game. That's a big game there. That's a big deal.
It is.
They put it on the screen. They get everybody fired up. And now it's like, okay, now we just got to go to Indiana. What do they care? I don't know. I think that'll help the Hoosiers. I think Indiana's going to play better. That's another issue that that they don't have a choice. But Indiana should shoot it better at home. And Kansas and Dickinson, I think that's that scares other teams more than it's going to bother Indiana, I think.
And you've got a scout on Hunter Dickinson.
That's what I'm talking about.
It'll be altered a little bit. Kansas will do different things with him. He's another year older. But – you know, you've got a much more extensive sort of book to hand over to Kalel Ware, to Malik Renew, to Peyton Sparks, to Anthony Walker.
Oh, look, bodies. That helps,
this
too.
This is what this guy does. We've played him for 3 years. We know exactly what this guy does. So,
and that is part of it as well. Indiana, if they take care of business against Kansas, does what? Well, it sets them up for a very nice holiday period, which is fine. We'll talk about that next week when we get together. But if they lose to Kansas, it's not the end of the world. It can't be with that much. Well, there's 18 Big Ten games
left. I do think they have to avoid losing to Kansas the way they've lost these other games we've been talking about. Like, it's got to be competitive. You can't walk out of your own building having lost by 20 points in a game like this that's been built up for 3 years now, because they signed it. They announced it a year before they went to Kansas. And so then that was a year and then a year and then a year. You know, I don't think you have to beat them. Again, the one problem is I do think Indiana, and I have a hard and fast rule in my own coverage, in my own writing, and my own podcasting about not talking about bracketology until at least Valentine's Day, not looking at bracket projections in any serious way. But you can do the math as the season goes along in terms of quality wins, quantity of quality wins, potentially damaging losses, all those things. Just where the Big Ten is this year and the fact that you're going to play Minnesota twice might matter, might not. You're going to play Penn State twice, probably won't matter. Suddenly Michigan State's not the win it would have been, you know, at least for now. Oh, the win it would have been November 1st. You're always going to have to go to Purdue. You got to go to Illinois. I think you get Ohio State and Wisconsin twice. But the point is there's fewer opportunities for these kinds of quality wins. You're not even sure exactly what Michigan away, which has normally been a good win over the last 10 years, is going to do for you on Selection Sunday. You are a lot better off if you're Indiana and you come out of non-conference play having, again, won all those games around Christmas, but then backstop that, or I guess – front stopped it? I'm not sure. Beaten Kansas. If you look at KenPom's like strength of schedule, it's risen steadily as they've added these games, as they've added UConn, Auburn, Kansas.
Right.
That number will probably suffer a little bit for the fact that Louisville is you know, Louisville got into the Empire Classic before we all realized how bad they were. But
that's a whole
the point
story.
Is, your strength of schedule number, the committee is not going to have any questions about whether Indiana challenged itself.
Right,
but the strength of schedule number only really works for you if you come out of the non-conference with at least one or two quality wins. And hey, listen, there's a decent. I wouldn't be shocked if that Harvard team is competing to win the Ivy League this year. And so then you say, hey, that's actually quietly a nice little win for them. Maybe it gets up to quad two. But that's, you can only say that if you also beat Kansas. If the jewel in the non-conference crown is Kansas, then you can talk about, well, we played a bunch of KenPom top 150 teams too, and we beat the eventual Ivy League champions on a neutral floor. You can talk about all that stuff only if you've got the big fish on the hook too. And I just think Indiana, from a tournament perspective, and probably from a confidence perspective too, I thought the importance of the Michigan game, as much as anything else, is first time of asking, they go on the road in the Big Ten, and they beat a team that at worst is probably about as good as them.
Like, at worst,
Michigan's,
I agree with
Michigan's
that,
got its own problems, but at worst, Michigan's probably about as good as Indiana, and Indiana beats them up there. And that's okay. Nobody's going to be asking you. You still don't have, it's Valentine's Day. You still don't have a Big Ten road win. What would it mean to get that off your back tonight at Purdue or at, you know,
one for one on the road,
Illinois or whatever? And it may turn out to be, if Michigan can kind of get itself together, it may hold up as a quality win over the course of the season. But you beat Kansas, and it's also, hey, we can stand in that room with those teams. We're still a work in progress. There's still a lot we got to do, but we can stand in the room with the Kansases, with the Purdues, with the Illinois, with the, you know, the teams that on that are left on our schedule, that the numbers and the metrics and the stats say are similar to Kansas. And you walk out of a commendably tough non-conference with a good strength of schedule number and a quality win that you don't have to go find in a Big Ten that's not as good as it's been in the past.
Yeah, you're not mining for pyrite, fool's gold, if you will. Zach Osterman, Indy Star, with us this afternoon. So when Indiana, to beat Kansas, we'll have to do simply what? Number one, you got to keep guys in front of you. I think that was the biggest takeaway from Auburn when you came up against a team that's with good players, which Kansas has, with athletic players, which Kansas has, the defensive effort. And I hope that's part of the perhaps illness, but that's where it has to start, right?
Yeah.
You got to keep guys in front of you. And
you can't let a team
that doesn't shoot it well, shoot it well.
Yeah, you can't let a team that doesn't make a ton of threes get loose from behind the three-point line, because that's when you start making life way too easy for them in what should be, and I suspect will be, a very tough road environment.
Should be a loud crowd. It's a stripe out. Make sure you're on the right side of the stripe, right? All right, great job, buddy. I'll see you Saturday. I will be, as the kids say, in the building. For Indiana, Kansas, 1230 CBS.